The Big Picture, brought to you by Bible Society Australia, shining the light of God's Word into every corner of your world. And Sydney's Hope 103.2. There's always hope. The Big Picture, a Christian insight on the world of film, television and popular culture, with magazine editor Ben McKechin and scriptwriter Mark Hadley.
Hello, I'm Ben McKechin.
And I'm his fraternal partner, Mark Hadley. Welcome to episode 23, The Big Picture, for the week beginning August the 3rd. And coming up on today's show, it's our explosive couples edition. That will get funnier as we go on. Beginning with the BBC's explosive The Politician's Husband.
Funnier, really? We're also going to talk about what are the best songs to break up to in movie land.
Plus all the relational mayhem in Fantastic Four, Trainwreck, and our top five big screen meltdowns. Yes, here we are at the Big Picture, and we are aware that there are few things as troubling to the mind and painful to the heart as a relationship meltdown. And so, in true Hollywood style, we decided to do a special about it. But seriously, does the entertainment industry do more than just make money out of shipwreck relationships, or do the big and small screens actually have some wisdom to offer on navigating these troubled waters? This week, in our explosive couples edition, we take a look at what Hollywood has to say about tension between husbands and wives, girlfriends and boyfriends, flame-throwing superheroes and genetically altered rock people. I think it's fair to say that we cover a great deal of ground. Stay tuned also for clinical psychologist Lynn Worsley, who has a few insights to offer on where the movies get it right and wrong in the new rom-com Trainwreck. And Ben has a chat with that little appreciated but much loved member of the movie society, The Extra. They tell The Big Picture what it's like when the big pictures wine and dine them and then dump their scenes in the trash. Ah, Ben, those heartless Hollywood execs.
Heartless, you think, Mark? Yeah, well, stay tuned. You're going to hear just how heartless Hollywood can be.
This is our heartless edition.
But not compared with British politicians, Mark. Which brings us to our first segment today, the Now Showing segment. We're talking about The Politician's Wife, which is a new mini-series that's airing on ABC. The Politician's Husband.
I know why you're confusing that, because The Politician's Wife actually was written by the same person but just a couple of years earlier.
Wow. So we're talking about The Politician's Husband.
This time around.
Yeah. It stars David Tennant as that husband. He's a cabinet minister whose career is on the down low, it's on the slide, just as his wife's political life is taking off. Now, on the surface, there certainly seems to be a lot of service going on, in a style a bit like that celebrated within the Bible. That sounds pretty good, because Tennant's character is stepping back for the sake of his wife. Yeah, sure, that sounds a bit thumbs up. But under the surface, it looks like sacrifices aren't going to be all hers.
Since your promotion to cabinet, have the demands of it impacted much on family life?
Sometimes you have to do bad things to get into power.
I am not the reason that you did this. I am just the excuse.
What sort of marriage is this? What are we doing?
We're flying blind. I am done with waiting in the wings.
Why did you lie?
Oh, we're pretty adept at juggling all that now.
The politician?
David Tennant plays the senior cabinet minister, Aidan Hoynes, who's forced to resign after a leadership spill goes wrong. And he's actually stabbed in the back by the very man who put him up for the job. Now, Emily Watson is his wife, and she's a politician too, and they make the golden couple of British politics. But their media-friendly relationship begins to develop cracks when Freya gets offered the now vacant cabinet position. Now, initially, David Tennant's character is thinking, great, this is the inside person I need to rebuild my own career and get back at my enemies. But Freya actually has, you know, Emily Watson's character, actually has plans of her own. And the more they actually plan for their own particular goals, the more they plan for themselves, the less they're planning together. And so the tension explodes, and over three episodes of really, you know, benchmark British drama, you end up with a really interesting examination of what it's like for couples not to work together.
Sounds a bit like House of Cards.
It is, except the beauty of House of Cards is that they keep coming back together,
yeah.
You know, the political couple. Whereas here we are watching an ever-widening gap between the ship and the dock, so to speak.
And getting David Tennant and Emily Watson in the same thing sounds like a recipe for gold.
It is absolutely marvellous TV. Okay, so the first episode was actually last night, but don't worry, iView was always there to save you. But the next 2 weeks, it just gets better and better and better. It's great.
Even though it sounds like it gets worse and worse and worse for them. And it seems like from what you're talking about, that this is a show that's going to dive into relationships and careers Is the show suggesting they can share the same space?
Well, that's the tricky thing, because I think the show actually suggests that the higher the stakes in terms of sort of career and things like that, the less room there is for relationship.
One's got to give?
Yeah, kind of. There's this big effort, you know, right from the beginning for the couple to try and work together. But what are clearly going on is a lot of buried resentments. So, you know, the idea, the sort of relationship where everything is forgiven until there's this real tension, and then stuff that we thought we'd got over all starts to surface. So that's the sort of thing. I think what they basically make it look like is that there's a zero-sum theory. You know, the idea that if you have more of one thing, you've got to have less of another.
Mm.
And if you have more career, you can't possibly have more endearing relationships.
So this is a pretty... this would be a scenario that a lot of people encounter in their day-to-day life. What do you reckon could make it possible? Because it sounds to me like the politician's husband is demonstrating, either saying that it's not possible, or at least showing you that when the way they try to do it doesn't make it possible. But do you think career and relationship can actually go together?
Yeah, well, look, this is something personally I've had to investigate, because my wife is a producer and I'm a writer, and so we often work together on projects. Is it possible for us to have, you know, these career things developing and at the same time have a relationship? Well, I don't think so. No.
The politician's husband is correct.
Yeah. No, what it is, it all comes down to goal. Okay. You see, and how you pursue that goal. So we've got to actually have a goal, you know, as a couple, and that has to begin with it being, firstly, the same goal. You know, we actually have to have the same thing in mind.
Of which, spoiler alert, as you mentioned in the introduction to the show, later in the show, we're going to be talking to Lynn Worsley, who's a clinical psychologist, about the film Trainwreck, and she talks a lot about common goals in relationships. It's going to be a bit of a common thread through this couples edition of The Big Picture. So it sounds like you really like the show, but there's some things you don't want to take away from it. You mentioned a little bit before, when the stakes are high, things seem to kind of get a bit frazzled and a bit frayed, and something's got to give. What about this idea? We talked about it in the introduction to this segment. It sounds like David Tennant's character has got quite a sacrificial approach when it comes to his wife and his wife's career on the ascendancy. So he puts his kind of on the back burner. But then the more you talk about it, it seems like the sacrificial approach just goes out the window. Like, is that how it has to be? Like, what we see in the politician's husband, it sounds like really good viewing, but should we be following that line of thinking? Should we be following that line of behavior, particularly as men?
This is not a non-Christian or Christian thing. Because I think non-Christians think, okay, look, let's just, one thing we'll give one way or another for the sake of another. And then at a very conservative end, you know, people in the Christian community might say the same thing. Well, you know, she's got to give way for him because he's leading the family or something like that. But what the Bible actually talks about is mutual submission. The idea that I am giving for you and you are giving for me. So the ideal is that in a relationship of two people, if I am sacrificing for my wife, if Aidan Hoynes in this case was sacrificing for his wife and she was sacrificing for him, both people are being served. But when we both go for ultimately what makes us feel good, no one in the relationship gets served. And the Bible's idea is this idea of mutual submission or mutual service, that my biggest goal is actually taking care of my wife. And it doesn't matter if we're talking about career or sex or, you know, getting the kids ready over breakfast. If my goal is to try and lift her up, if my goal is to try and preserve her and point her to Jesus and make her more like God, you know, then somehow I also am going to be served. Now, the Bible does say, too, that people will consider this foolishness, that if you actually live a life where I am constantly sacrificing for somebody else, the world will say you're an idiot. And in this series, too, there is this sense, I don't want to give away the end, but there is this sense in the end that they're going to have to, one of them is going to have to win and one of them is going to have to lose. Mm. But the Bible actually says the opposite.
But it also, in the show, from what I understand, and not to give the game away too much, but it doesn't seem to go well for their relationship when they do operate like that.
Well, it goes at least as well enough for them to have commissioned a second series. they'll still be around.
But it sounds like you are highly recommending this first one. So The Politician's Husband, it's airing on ABC 2. It's on Sunday nights at 8:30 p.m. As you said, it stars David Tennant, Emily Watson. It's rated M for adult themes, coarse language, nudity, sexual references, sex scenes. My goodness, there's so much adult relationship stuff in that one show, Mark. That is The Politician's Husband.
Plenty, plenty, plenty. And now on to something related. If we're talking about breakups now, we're talking about soundtracks.
Yeah, we are. We're onto soundtracks. And we thought, as we're talking about explosive couples and breakups and meltdowns, what better way to soundtrack that than think about scenes in movies where couples break up? So let's play our first selection.
say.
Hit the road, Jack, and don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more. Hit the road, Jack, and don't you come back no more.
Oh, woman, don't treat me so mean. You're the meanest old woman that I've ever seen. I guess if you say so, I'll have to pack my things and go.
That's right, hit the road, Jack, and don't you come back.
Hit the Road Jack, performed by Ray Charles, and this was in the movie Ray, the biopic about Ray Charles that starred Jamie Foxx a couple of years ago. And there's a scene in this film where Ray Charles is in a hotel room and he's actually practicing this song, which was given to him by an artist called Percy Mayfield back in 1960. And so he's practicing away, and in the other room is one of his backup singers, Margie Hendrix, who's played by Regina King in the film. And then this scene gets really quite explosive because she runs off to the bathroom. He accuses her of being a drunk. She says, "I'm not drunk, I'm pregnant, and it's your baby." And Ray Charles is married. But then what happens in the rest of this scene is quite horrendous, where Ray Charles is just saying, "Well, you can't have the baby," and he's effectively telling her to have an abortion. She's saying, "I don't want to do that." At the same time, he's still practicing Hit the Road Jack in the background.
That is so clever.
And she gets really fired up and says, "Well, I know you're not going to leave your family, and so from now on, it's strictly business between you and me." And she points like really angrily at him. And instead of doing something like even remotely nice, he just says, "Keep that anger. That's how we should sing this song." And then they launch into Hit the Road Jack, which is why you get this real kind of like passion and anger about this massive separation that the song talks about. And yet the movie scene really captures how often in life, when something really massive and a big deal happens, we can treat it like it isn't. And it just goes to how selfish Ray Charles looks in this movie quite constantly all the way through. And incredibly soundtracked by this amazing song.
Which is a brilliant song. Brilliant film, by the way. Only if we don't see Ray, I think it's an excellent film.
It certainly isn't, but does definitely capture, as that song does, the selfishness of an artist.
Well, another week, another superhero adventure crying out for your hard-earned dollars.
Yeah, it must have been at least a week.
Oh, gosh.
Ant-Man,
I'm not even sure it's off the screen yet.
It's at least been, what, 2 weeks?
Oh, good. I'm sure Marvel's actually got the year. Somewhere there's a Marvel Center, HQ, where they've just mapped out the year in terms of hero releases. Well, just like Spider-Man got the reboot treatment during the past few years, though we already had a Spider-Man trilogy, about 5 minutes before those new ones turned up, another crack at the Fantastic Four has landed. And like Ben and I, you probably were disappointed by those cartoony Fantastic Four movies with Jessica Alba and Chris Evans before he hit his superhero stride as Captain America. But the Fantastic Four reboot, though, promises to be more serious and spectacular and might just be a blockbuster reminder of how relationship tension can be improved when cooperation kicks in.
All I want to know is, where are my children?
Four have survived. All exhibit unique physical conditions.
I just want to fix my friends.
You can't fix this.
You should use these powers to help people.
You opened a door you don't know how to close. You don't know anything about what's coming.
What is coming?
Okay, so help me out here. Do we need this? I would have said
and still say no, we don't, particularly after those Fantastic Four movies. Everyone remembers those with Jessica Alba and Chris Evans. Not much top at all. But the trailers for this film, it was some kind of hope for what this Fantastic Four might be. It's definitely going more along the lines, not quite of The Dark Knight, but it's got that serious side to the origin story of superheroes. And what we get here is the origin story of four superheroes, not just one. These various characters in here of these kind of gifted youngsters that are varying degrees of either scientist or computer geek or some sort of cocky jet pilot.
And for those people who don't understand, what basically happens? Like the four of them just decide to hang out in
And get superpowers?
Yeah.
Somehow they get involved in a mission that goes off into space and they get blasted by cosmic rays after they discover, they end up cracking, they crack interdimensional travel somehow.
Oh, yeah, that old chestnut.
And when that happens, of course, what's
My
then...
wife and I did that on our Hindu.
They should have made a movie about it. Instead, they're focusing on these guys. Something in those travels gets them hit with cosmic rays, and they end up developing superhero powers. And at the same time...
As opposed to cancer.
As opposed to getting obliterated on the spot. Not usually nice to joke about cancer.
No. We weren't.
So we move on back to Fantastic Four. So it sounds like, I mean, this
thanks
was,
for putting me in it there, yeah, by the way. That was good.
But this, I think you put yourself there. And this was, we got this story already in the other Fantastic Four movies. So to me, it doesn't seem like there's much reinvention going in terms of the storyline. How they handle it and what they then do with it is remains to be seen. But I think there's more promise for this one based on the trailers and who's involved.
Okay, so what sort of relationship tension? It's our relationship episode. What sort of relationship tension we look at in the Fantastic Four?
Loads, apparently. So there's a brother and sister in here, an adopted brother and sister, played by the actress Kate Mara and Michael B. Jordan, who was in a film called Chronicle a couple of years ago.
Which was excellent.
And the director of that, Josh Trank, is the guy behind Fantastic Four. And then the lead character is a scientist called Reed Richards, played by Miles Teller, who was in Whiplash last year. And then Billy Elliot himself, Jamie Bell, the actor, is playing the guy who turns into the Thing, the big rock monster.
Spends most of the film with prosthetics all over his face.
Yeah, and smashing stuff a bit like Hulk. Yeah. But the relationship dynamics, everything from the brother and sister bond to the bickering chemistry you get between potential love interests that are Reed Richards, the scientist Miles Teller plays, and Sue Storm that Kate Mara plays. And then you get also the father figure of the sister and the brother. And then there's, of course, a former ally, former friend turned enemy. So Dr. Doom in this. Who played
this is by- the only reason I'm lining up for this film. Is
really? Because, for Dr. Doom?
Yeah, because I think the weird thing about Fantastic Four is now that we've got the Avengers out there as a sort of a team, I think Fantastic Four is actually going to play second fiddle to that.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do, given this is a Marvel creation, as you said at the start, and it's also the first time in the comic books, at least, that they paired together a bunch of superheroes. It wasn't just an individual title. And what drove the comics along, and what I think is will drive this film along, as your question was suggesting, is relationship dynamics, and particularly how they go, not just in the build-up to their cosmic travels, and not just around that, but what happens afterwards when you get afflicted with these superhero powers, what you're going to do then as a result of that, particularly when you feel cursed by them as opposed to really wanting to go on and save the world with them.
So does anything actually unite them? I mean, because I know you've got
saving the world.
Oh, saving the world.
They do go on to, again, surprise, surprise, save the world.
Well, it's good that someone's around to do that. Because it seems to be getting in an awful lot of trouble.
Who else would do it but superheroes? Yeah, they inevitably do go on to decide, we've got these superhero powers, a bit like Spider-Man, with great power comes great responsibility. What should we do with these? Well, I think, and as one of the characters in the trailer describes, they should then go on to help other people, which is a really interesting concept where you've got people who, for all kinds of reasons, aren't working well together. You might have everything from love issues to resentment to jealousy to all kinds of friction going on. But there's something, and as you were talking about earlier when we were discussing the politician's husband, there's something to do with a common goal and a common purpose that can unite people in ways that their own tensions and their own issues and selfish agendas can get left behind. And instead, cooperation comes to the fore. I think that's a really fascinating idea.
Is that like the golden hammer, so to speak, to actually bring things back together? And you think cooperation is the
solution?
I think so.
It sounds a little bit Sesame Street, but... like cooperation, I think, can really make it happen, as that awesome Sesame Street song used to say. At church at the moment, I go to a church in the West called Village Church, and we've been doing a study series on what it means to go to church. Why would you go to church? What's the point of that? And one of the underlying things about going to a church is around cooperation, in as much as there's all kinds of different people there. You might be having all sorts of tensions and frictions going on because church environments aren't perfect. People aren't perfect. But at the same time, when you cooperate and work together for the greater good, for common goals, it's remarkable the sort of sense of unity and purpose and direction you can get, and also just a greater sense of harmony and meaning that can go towards everyone's life, not just individuals. So it's quite incredible to raise up the common good and cooperate together rather than be fractious. And I think that's what Fantastic Four is going to demonstrate, maybe not in church, more kind of smashing supervillains around the world.
Yeah, but it does sound to me like you're onto something there as far as church is concerned, because it's a very modern thing, isn't it, for people to say, I'm a Christian, sure, or this is what I believe. I don't really need to go to church. And yet, actually, well, by denying ourselves that cooperation, you'd say that we're denying ourselves, what, the ability to actually grow? Or?
Well, I think you can grow as a Christian elsewhere outside of church. You don't have to go to church to prove you're a Christian. There's nothing like that. I think a better question would be, why would you not want to go to a place that gathers together people who believe and worship in the same thing you do and are striving to grow in the same faith that you are? Why would you not want to gather together regularly and cooperate, work together with all your differences too, but uniting for this common good of serving God, serving each other, and loving Jesus? Why would you not want to do that on a regular basis? That's an amazing thought to come out of Fantastic Four with. Who knows, when we finally get to see it, we might come out punching the air and saying, we should cooperate and go to church more.
Or take a church group to Fantastic Four, which is released nationally from Thursday, August 6th. It stars Miles Teller, Kate Mara, Jamie Bell, and Michael B. Jordan. It's not yet rated, but our educated guess is it will be rated M.
It will be.
Safe for maximum audience.
And here's the bit where we plug one of the great sponsors of our show, Insight. So if you go to Insight's website, insights.uca.org.au, when Fantastic Four lands, you will be able to read the celebrated, the expert words of Russ Matthews, their resident reviewer, telling you what to think about Fantastic Four. And if Russ doesn't get a reference into cooperating at church
or baseball,
we'll personally be giving him a phone call. What's up next, Mark? Where are we at?
Well, right now, we're coming up to Press Record.
Oh, we are. I did that this week.
I know. Press Record actually is one of my favourite segments, because if you're wondering what Press Record is, if you're new to the big picture, it's an opportunity for us to basically put the microphones off and go and get a cup of coffee. Now, really, what it is an opportunity for us to hear from you, because there's lots of people who have insights in popular culture. And this week, well, you've actually talked to some people who have some very, very personal, relational, one-to-ones with the big industry.
With the big industry, that's right. Before we get to your top five list this week, which you're going to be focusing on couple meltdowns in movies. Before we get to that combustible list, we're going to be talking to some people who are, as you said, they're real, and they're also notable examples of where movies and getting dumped come together. So this week, I spoke with two blokes, Simon and Mike, who know what it's like to have Hollywood rip out your heart and smush it in your face. And if that sounded lovey-dovey, it's certainly not meant to be, because brace yourself, everybody, for the heartbreaking true story of what it's like to be an extra on a major superhero film filmed in Sydney and then be dumped. Simon and Mike, thanks for joining us on The Big Picture. Now, you guys haven't met before this conversation, but you share something quite remarkable in common. Both of you were extras on Superman Returns, and both of you didn't make the final film. Is that correct?
Sadly, no. Well, you're correct in that we were in Superman Returns, but you're right, we didn't make the final cut.
Now, that's you, Mike, and we'll get to you in just a second, Simon. But first, this question to you, Mike. What character did you play, and how many days on set were you?
I was on set for 2 days at Fox Studios in Sydney. I first played Man in Subway.
Oh, and, yeah. Who could forget?
And Man, of course. And Man coming out of Daily Planet. So,
which role did you prefer, Mike?
They were both really quite similar. In fact, they were one and the same, would you believe?
So they were same man.
Yeah, both were equally satisfying in their own way, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Simon, what man did you play on Superman Returns?
Played unnamed scientist, like one of 20, I think.
Do you know which number you were?
Probably 13, I guess.
And what was your day or days like on set?
It was just the one day. It was an outdoor. I think they picked us up at Fox Studios and then took us out to a location in Paddington. And we're up on the top of a building somewhere, with a city view. It was supposed to be a part of the city that was, not distinctly Sydney, just a generic city landscape.
And guys, I'm not trying to rub salt into old wounds, but you didn't make the final cut. Why do you think it was that your scenes didn't make it into the final film?
Good question. I think, well, the sequence that I was in, I guess it was running a bit long. And now, as it is, actually, if you have the extended version, as I do, and if you look at the behind the scenes footage,
yes,
there is around 2.5 seconds of an establishing shot of the extras in the background, and you can see me.
Mate, wow.
That shot.
That's awesome.
Thank you. Fantastic. What about you, Simon?
Oh, yeah, they cut us out. I've got to confess, the scene that we shot was, it was supposed to go onto a TV screen inside another scene. Does that make sense?
Yes, yeah.
So we were shooting TV footage that was then going to be put into another scene, which wasn't cut, but if you squint and look carefully, maybe I'm in it. I don't know.
Gentlemen, what was it like being on set of a blockbuster? There'd be plenty of people listening that would love to have done what you did, whether they made the final cut or not, would have loved to be part of it. Mike, what was it like?
It was great fun. Yeah, I'd never really been part of anything like it before or since, actually. Just the sheer amount of people that were there and the sheer amount of diversity among all the extras. Just about all you can do all day is sit and talk. Because, yeah, the whole thing is really, okay, get ready, okay, set, and then I'll wait, and then you wait for 20 minutes, and then you think you're going to go again, and then you wait for another 20 minutes, and then it's lunch. And during all that time, you just are talking to everyone. And so you had people who worked in the city, you had mums, you had grandparents, you had people who, you know, had all kinds of different hobbies, and you just are talking with this, you know, huge diversity of people all day. So that was fun. And then, of course, just all the movie magic all around you, the styrofoam daily planet that didn't matter if you stepped on it and broke it, because then they'd cover it with paint and make it look like more earthquake damage.
Now, magic in movies. What about you, Simon?
I agree. It was it's a surreal experience to be on a movie set. This was, I'd been doing extra work for a little while, but this was the kind of, I think it was the only feature film extra job that I did, and it was the last extra work I did, so I sort of ended on a, I don't know if it's a high note or a low note, but it was good night. It was good good times. It is amazing how many people are involved in putting a movie together. If I could tell a funny story, I think that the director wasn't around for our shoot. We had the assistant director, and then on set you have then the second AD and the third AD. Third assistant director is the one who talks to the extras, and I was given this description of what I needed to do, which was just to be a scientist with a white coat on, with some camera equipment, and then just play with the camera equipment. But he told me to make all my actions just extreme, like just go way out there. So I did. And as they said, action, and everyone did their stuff, and I was waving arms around and moving camera bits here and there and everywhere. And they said, cut. And then a few seconds later, the assistant director came to me and just looked at me and said, what are you doing? And fortunately, the third AD stepped in and said, oh, well, actually, he's doing what I told him to do. So I was hamming it up a bit too extreme, I think. Mate. And maybe that's why the whole scene was cut out.
Yeah, I was going to say, we can always blame the third assistant director. And possibly the reason that Superman Returns didn't go so well around the world is because it didn't feature you, Mike, or you, Simon, in the final cut. There's another Superman film coming out next year, the Batman versus Superman movie. Guys, here's your chance to pitch for your characters to return in that film. What would you like to say to the director of that film, Zack Snyder? Give us like a 25 words or less on why he should put you in that movie. Mike?
Okay. Does your film have a subway in it? If it does, the subway scene will only be heightened by my presence.
You do need a man in the subway.
You do? Yeah.
That's
What's
right.
the subway for without a man running out of it?
Simon, why should you be in the Batman and Superman film?
Oh, look, I'd be perfect for the role of a scientist who can't act to save his life. If they need that, then I'm in.
I'm sure they do. And if they don't need that part, they're writing it in right now. Mike and Simon, thank you very much for letting us know what it's like to work as an extra on a massive movie. Sorry you didn't make the final cut.
Sorry you didn't make the final cut. The movie,
huge amounts of sympathy.
The movie the guys were just pitching for at the end is Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice. That's going to come out next year. And still, there is still time, Zack Snyder, to include Man in Subway and Nutty Professor Number 9. And Simon and Mike are waiting by their phones for that call.
Man in Subway.
Mike was Man in Subway. I can't believe he was cut.
Oh, Nutty Professor Number 9. Okay, who would not have a whole storyline built around those characters? I'd like to see one with a cape, at least. You can't get enough of those. And if you'd like to see more of that sort of stuff, you should actually ponder the particular URL that is the-big-picture.com.au.
What's that URL?
Let me say it one more time just for you, the-big-picture.com.au.
You didn't need to say it again for me. I've got it completely in my head. It's the-big-picture.com.au. Maybe other people aren't getting it.
Yeah, if they're not, then the last time they'll probably hear it will be when I say the-big-picture.com.au.
There'll be T-shirts next week.
Rock on over to our site and you'll be able to actually hear past programs. You'll be able to see all the videos that are associated with the show. Soon to come, we're adding articles. The sort of articles we're referring to, we would like you to have a chance to basically learn more about culture, learn how to
pull it apart yourself. So, you know, as a Christian, you can basically look at the world around you and say, how am I going to use this to point people to God? The world itself is screaming out about God. How am I actually going to show people that, you know, draw their attention to it?
Yeah, and send us your feedback too, such as what's great about the show and what can be made even greater.
Yeah, or just find us on Facebook.
Yeah, do that.
It's another, and abuse us there. Okay, this week, the top five couple meltdown films. We've been talking about all manner of relationship stresses so far this week. Later in the show, we're going to get to clinical psychologist Lynn Worsley to take a professional look at this week's big rom-com, Trainwreck. But so it seemed fitting that this week's top five would follow a similar theme. Behold, the top five couple meltdown films.
Five.
It is impossible to think of a more distressing couple meltdown film than War of the Roses. Now, Danny DeVito basically directed actors Michael Douglas, Kathleen Turner, and Danny DeVito himself in what was basically an experiment in seeing what happens to a couple when they get all sorts of success and all sorts of money, and what will that actually do to them as people.
And this was made back in the 80s, and it started out quite as a dark comedy and then just got increasingly darker.
Well, that's the thing. The whole idea is it's supposed to be a comedy, but you watch this film and by the end you're just wincing and hoping that they won't kill each other. The film was apparently, in all the films that they made together, because Kathleen and Michael actually got a few together, they got on really well, you know, in this film, and had to work really hard to be the bickering, self-destructive mess that they end up on character. So it's a great place to start, War of the Roses, but it takes us into new territory with the next one.
Four.
Now, when you're thinking about couple breakups, you're basically thinking about husband and wife, okay? But one of the great staples of couple meltdowns is the buddy film.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Milo and Otis.
No, yes, the buddy plus animal film. Very few lines are written for dogs, you know, but that's it.
Not enough. But the buddy cop movies, you're right, it's a good choice.
Then there are very few films that do it, the meltdown as well as the Lethal Weapon.
Welcome back.
So Richard Donner basically puts Mel Gibson and Danny Glover in every film.
He was the director
film,
of Lethal Weapon?
Sorry, he was. Puts Mel Gibson and Danny Glover in every film into a situation where Danny Glover is going to start screaming at Mel Gibson for some particular reason. And it's almost become a cliche in the film itself that even as they're yelling at each other, they're busy trying to shoot the bad guys or drive some car off a cliff or all these sorts of things. And so I figured that
because deep down they love each other, but they just make each other crazy, Mark.
Yeah, the crazy antics that they do each other because... And so this meltdown is not so much a meltdown at the end of the relationship, but almost the intense furnace-like relationship itself that melds them further together. But well worth the mention, as is our third.
Three.
I think that of all the couple meltdown films that truly terrify... There's nothing like Fatal Attraction from 1987.
Michael Douglas' second mention on the explosive couple meltdown list.
And now the first mention of Glenn Close. Now, so of all the sort of couple meltdowns we've had, husband and wife, and now we've had buddies, the lover and the spurned, okay? The idea of seeing the adulterous relationship, this terrifying breakup in Fatal Attraction between an unfaithful husband and his lover involved knives, toddlers, and boiled rabbits.
Boiled rabbits. Yeah. Everyone remembers the boiled rabbit.
Now, the interesting thing is that, just a bit of trivia here, is that they actually reshot the ending of the film because the audience hated it so much, you know, the way that, the relationship so completely dissolved. The original ending was that the idea that Alex would kill herself and that
Alex is the character that Glenn Close
played
plays.
By Glenn Close, and Michael Douglas's character would be framed for that murder by her as she's killing herself and then would go to prison for life.
That sounds like the best way you could spend your Friday night at a cinema, Mark.
How depressing. There it was, and people didn't like it.
No?
No, they wanted some form of happy ending like Alex killing herself. Full stop. So anyway, there you go. According to Glenn Close, though, people still approach her to this day and say, thank you, you saved my marriage.
Some good can come out of Fatal Attraction.
So let's go to something a little more positive.
Two.
Positive on the explosive couple meltdown? What
couple meltdown list, something actually positive. I'm going to say a few names to you, and you're going to know this film without any troubles whatsoever. Humphrey Bogart. Ingrid Bergman, directed by Michael Kurtz.
Oh, Casablanca.
Casablanca, 1942.
We finally moved out of the 80s and gone backwards.
There we go. And if I'd only managed, there's a little bit of hint of French there. If I'd only managed to get more black and white into it, then it would have been an opportunity for you to sort of rave about it.
You would have transformed into me.
I would have. But in fact, actually, what happens in this film is probably the most memorable and beautiful couple breakup ever seen in cinema. You see, because, like, to me, you've got these two characters, Rick Blaine, who's played by Humphrey Bogart, and you've got Ingrid Bergman's Ilse Lund, and they are a couple who are drawn together. Ilse's married, Rick is this ne'er-do-well, sort of hanging out in Casablanca, and basically they want to be together, but there's a certain nobility about this, because they decide that ultimately it's not the right thing. So at the last moment, Rick tells Ilse to board that plane to Lisbon with her husband, telling her she'd regret it if she stayed. Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but soon and for the rest of your life. Now, I love that sort of breakup, okay? Mm. Because today...
Yeah, me too.
Today, if we have that sort of situation develop in a film, they basically dump the husband, take the plane tickets themselves, and they're off to...
Yeah, if you made that movie today, you'd never get that speech that you just said then. Never.
You'd never get it. No. So we're world away from that now.
That choice doesn't make it to number one.
It doesn't, because number one is, in fact, actually the worst breakup ever.
One. Was that the worst breakup ever?
1976, a film came out that basically won 5 Academy Awards, including Best Picture. It starred Dustin Hoffman, who got Best Actor, Meryl Streep, who got Best. Where's the next one down from actors?
You mean actress?
No, I do not.
Oh, you mean supporting actress?
Thank you very much.
Ooh, no, move on quickly.
What a bad... I didn't do that. You did that. Okay. I'm, of course, talking about the 1976 film Kramer versus Kramer.
Oh, man. I should stop laughing and get my sad face on. That movie is depressing.
Yeah,
but
it
great,
is,
but
it
depressing.
It is probably one of the hardest films to watch, and I would suggest one of the most necessary films to watch. My wife and actually went through, I recently went through a sort of a Hollywood phase where we watched the best films of, you know, the last 20 years. So those that have been given, you know, Best Film Academy Awards. And Kramer versus Kramer is truly harrowing, but really should be watched. Because it talks about divorce in a way that we're not really comfortable with talking about divorce. If we talk about divorce today, and particularly one where children are involved, like Kramer versus Kramer, and for those people who don't know the plot, basically it is a horrifying sort of courtroom tussle between a husband and a wife for the custody of their little, you know, son Billy. It is today to talk about divorce, we always talk about it in terms of how much better it is for the person who is suddenly set free. And ultimately, if there are children involved, it's kind of that Mrs. Doubtfire approach. They're going to make much better mummies and daddies for you now that they're quite separate. Mm. But the truth is much more, you know, realistically captured by Kramer versus Kramer. It is terrifying for the kids involved. It is painful. And though we don't want to say in any way that there aren't necessary cases for divorce, I think our society, when we're batting a rate of about 1 in 2, you know, 1 divorce for every 2 marriages in Australia, really needs to stop and take pause as to the effect. It's not just about somehow setting yourself free. The reverberations can be truly awesome in their damage.
Mm.
Well, I guess I could talk about divorce. That's the end of our top 5, and we're left with a large
lands
amount
on bigger
of,
down note. Good choice, but down note.
Yeah, I know. As I was saying, we were prepping for the show, you know, before, and I was thinking to myself, yeah, I picked a really upbeat top 5 to do this week. But how about, to cap it off, why don't we listen to a really, really good argument from Kramer versus Kramer?
I want my son.
You can't have him.
Don't get defensive. Don't try to bully me.
I'm not getting defensive. Who walked out of the house 15 months ago?
I don't care.
Joe.
I am still his mother.
Yes, from 3,000 miles away, and just because you sent a few postcards, it gives you the right to come back here?
I never stopped wanting him.
What makes you so sure he wants you?
What makes you so sure he doesn't want me?
Okay, look, we're going to sit here and bat this back and forth like it was for 8 years. It's like old times.
Well, you can't deny me access to my
Don't tell me what I can or cannot do. Don't talk to me that way.
I have anticipated
Okay, look,
this
I don't want to get into this. Look, you're going to have to do what you're going to have to do, and I'm going to have to do what
I'm very sorry about this.
Okay, because just do what you have to do.
Wow, Mark, from one breakup to another. We're back to soundtrack selection for this week. Number 2.
Let's play the track.
Got me. I'm intrigued. Okay, because that's I Want Candy. Bow Wow Wow.
Yes.
What film?
High Fidelity.
Oh!
It's from High Fidelity, that John Cusack, great John Cusack movie from the 90s. It's from this scene where, you know, for anyone who hasn't seen the movie, he plays a character called Rob who works at a record store. It's a movie about kind of the male perspective on growing up and maturing, but kind of getting stuck in this sort of adolescent funk for your whole life. And he makes all these different lists with his mates. And all the way through the movie, you get these lists. And one of the lists is the top five all-time breakup list. And at number one on the top five all-time breakup list is Alison Ashmore, who Rob, the character in the movie, broke up with when he was in high school. In the background, I Want Candy is playing as Rob recounts this heartbreaking moment where he was with this girl, kissing her after school. It was their relationship lasted for a total of 6 hours, Mark, 6 hours, but it left this indelible impression on him for the rest of his life, as he goes on to explain that he thinks every other relationship breakdown that he had has some kind of semblance, some kind of sniff or glimpse of that first one. And so he's a really amazing representation, this guy Rob, with I Want Candy playing in the background, of a bloke who can't really move on with his life, is so trapped in his past and affected by it, makes all these lists and consumes all this information, but can't really bring it all together to grow as a person. All soundtrack to I Want Candy.
Well, in our What Your Kids Are Watching This Week, we're basically taking ourselves into rom-com territory. The romantic comedy is a Hollywood staple, and what we seem to want to laugh at the most when it comes to romance is just how bad we can be at becoming a couple. That's nowhere more evident than in this week's release of the movie Trainwreck, starring American funny girl Amy Schumer opposite fellow comedian Bill Hader, and including a galaxy of well-known stars like Daniel Radcliffe, who shocked me when I saw him come up on the screen, opposite Tilda Swinton. Matthew Broderick gets in there as well, and most surprisingly, basketball legend LeBron James.
He was fantastic.
Who steals the film.
Yeah, okay. Best character in the movie.
Incredible. It's no wonder we're looking at this release as a most likely for what your kids are watching this week.
Girls, your mother and I are getting divorced. Monogamy isn't realistic.
Monogamy isn't realistic.
Again.
Monogamy isn't realistic.
I didn't understand that word at the time, but now I know exactly what he was talking about.
Saturday, I would love it if you were my date.
I can't do that because, like, you and I won't ever see each other again. I wake up late every morning, money just cooling, I'm still yawning. Oh, morning.
Oh, Amy, what happened? Did church let out early?
Ooh, I like Tom's sweater. Does he teach computer in a church basement? Well, don't get all threatened just because you don't understand the concept of marriage. You dress him like that so nobody else wants to have sex with him? That's cool.
Hey!
The premise is pretty straightforward. Amy is a disaster when it comes to relationships. She has no conscience when it comes to using others to make herself happy, and no commitment when it comes to keeping things going. Amy and her sister are the victims of a marriage breakup and a self-centered father who assures them that monogamy is not realistic, as you heard.
Repeat, not realistic, not realistic, as they say many times in the film.
And 20 years later, Amy's a borderline alcoholic, workaholic, and sexaholic. But is she beyond hope? Hollywood doesn't seem to think so, and puts her together with the incredibly likable Aaron, who seems determined to stand by her all the way to the straight and narrow. Now, a big warning here. Ben and I got to see this film together. There are many funny parts in it. It's festooned with the sort of crude humor that's bound to leave you wincing. There are some jokes in there that are just, I'm not even sure M would take us where we need to go.
No.
Okay, so Not to mention the language and the nudity. Sadly, that's not going to stop a lot of teens and 20-somethings lining up to buy tickets, but we thought that maybe it would be good for parents to be prepared by pulling at some of the relationship threads the film offers. So we turned to clinical psychologist Lynn Worsley to tell us what a professional might say if Amy wandered into the office one day.
Lynn, thank you so much for joining us on The Big Picture. Now, what does it tell you in your professional capacity as a clinical psychologist, what does it tell you when someone is moving from one-night stand to the next?
Well, the first thing that I'd be thinking about is the fact that they can't seem to connect at any deeper level. They're very superficial in their relationships. And possibly they're in a situation where they're frightened of going into a deeper relationship. And so it's much easier just to have a one-night stand where you feel good for a little while and someone gives you lots of affection, and then you don't have to deal with the aftermath of any sort of level of commitment.
I should just remind listeners that you haven't actually seen the film Trainwreck, but you described the lead character in that film, Amy, very, very succinctly just based on that first question. She's a woman who moves from one night stand to the next, and as the film progresses, a lot of the things you just mentioned come out about her character.
Yeah, I'm amazed too, actually. I thought you told us, you began by telling us that you actually hadn't seen the film, and now I'm starting to doubt that altogether. one of the interesting things she actually says as she's talking about this is that, now let's see if I get this right, Ben, monogamy is not practical, or is it not possible? What was it she was saying?
One of those P words, and more to the point, her dad is the one that instructs her in that, like gives that to her effectively as a mantra when she's a child, and then she lives the rest of her life out following that along.
Yeah, I think when that happens, basically what you've got is a whole lot of issues with the fact that she just doesn't want to get any deeper. And there's a fear around that, and possibly if she's been told from her father that this is the situation, then I would imagine that she's got that instilled in her that, you know, basically you just don't commit to anyone. You don't get any deeper than you need to. Looking at the trailer, what I can understand is it's almost like a back-to-front relationship. The old-fashioned way was that, you know, you met someone, you fell in love, you thought about, you know, you might see them again, and then you might think about engagement, and then you might think about marriage, and that's the end of, you know, happily ever after. This is almost the opposite. You get with someone, you avoid getting any deeper because that might mean commitment. The happily ever after is to avoid commitment at all costs.
One of the things that actually comes out in the film is the idea that, well, I guess it's starting to sound something like a bit of an excuse, the way you describe it, that she's never quite satisfied in the bedroom, that there's, you know, characters who are just never quite, or she's using them very much to just fulfill her own needs. Is that what you're talking about, this diminution of relationship down to just basic serving your own needs?
Yeah. It's a case of almost like an immediate gratification. You can get your needs met really quickly and then you can walk away and you don't have any commitment to it. It's a real cop-out for anything deeper. It's quite a problem, I'd say.
And Lynn, the mantra that we mentioned before that this lead character, Amy in Trainwreck, says because her dad pretty much like drummed it into her as a kid. Working with a client who came in and mentioned this mantra that their dad had given them, and then you learned also that their dad ran out on their mum, would you be surprised to learn that this client had gone on to live a life similar to their parents, to their father?
No, not at all.
What kind of impact do you think it would have on their relationships?
We tend to look at our parents' relationships and we tend to think of them as being the norm as a child. So when we're growing up, so until we've actually started to doubt our parents' relationship, which, you know, is round about our, you know, teens, mid-teens, until then we've had all of those years of laying down what you think is the norm. Then you start to realise that maybe not the norm, but by then you still have a lot of entrenched behaviours. So essentially that, of course, is going to come into your behaviours when you sort of partner up with someone else.
Oh, wow, this is amazing to me because you seem to be saying, see me if I've got this wrong here, but you seem to be saying that even the bad stuff, even the stuff that we could recognise, we say, I'm never going to really do that, is somehow still entrenched underneath there and we're just as likely to carry it out if we're not careful.
That's right, and one of the keys to changing that is an awareness. So once you have an awareness, you think, oh, there's that behaviour again, I didn't mean to do that and I'd like to do something else instead, but you know, in that process, you've probably repeated the behaviour several times with your partner, And, you know, it's hard to shape, but it is possible to change.
Now, Lynn and Mark, we might have forgotten at this point that we're still talking about this new movie, Trainwreck. It's a romantic comedy, but a lot of what we're discussing is really quite heartbreaking. And I was a bit torn watching what this lady, Amy, goes on about with her relationships and how she approaches particularly a new one with a new bloke. Lynn, are you intending to go out and see Trainwreck? To me, it sounds a little bit like you'd be walking into your own office.
Yeah, it did feel a bit like that when I watched the trailer.
Okay, well, listen, let's take us on to our final question. The more fractures and fault lines you find in relationships when you're actually looking at relationships, do you ever come to the conclusion that, you know, there are some really basic things, some things we can share with our audience, some factors you found as a Christian that might actually lead to consistently strong, resilient relationships as opposed to the train wreck we've been talking about?
Yeah, there is. But let's just remember, too, that there are a lot of Christians with really poor relationships. So it's not the key that they're Christians that make good relationships. However, the record for Christians is that they have more lasting relationships than non-Christians. And I'm not comparing them to other religions either, so they've got longer relationships as well. But the key to really good, long-lasting relationships is having a vision that is a common vision of their future together. Oftentimes, couples will argue about things when they don't see what the vision ahead is. So once you have a goal or a common vision, you then assume or you can make assumptions that the behaviour of the other must be something that has got to do with the vision that the other person has.
Wow, you haven't given me much hope for that train wreck relationship at all. I mean, I don't want to kill the plot for anybody, but I can tell you now that Ben and I wandered out going, yeah, they seem to have solved that problem, but there's no real vision for where they're going.
And look, there are cracks and problems in every relationship. I do not know a relationship that is perfect. And I just think, really, a perfect relationship would be really boring, to be honest. That whole notion that we all come into a relationship with lots of flaws and lots of difficulties makes it very interesting. And that process of change is a great little sort of dance around how you're going to go. And if you have a vision ahead of what you want and where you want to be, you know, in, you know, 50 years' time, and I often say this to my clients, what would you like your great-grandchildren to say about you when they're celebrating your 65th wedding anniversary? And that sort of lays down what are the values, where are we heading? And it's a great way to think about it. And people with long-term relationships that are good, they actually do have that when you ask them.
Thanks again to Lynn Worsley for joining us on The Big Picture this week, for helping us all to have a better take on what not to take away from Trainwreck, which is at cinemas from August 6. It does star Amy Schumer, Bill Hader, LeBron James. It's rated MA 15+ for strong sex scenes, sexual references, and coarse language. And Mark, I don't know if it came through in that interview what we thought about the film. Overall, I didn't like it as much as the preview audience did. This is a film that definitely plays well to its audience, and a lot of its smutty sex talk seemed to go over well, and people were laughing quite uproariously through the movie. But overall, I was a bit disappointed in the storyline, in as much as where it gets to in the end and what it tries to sell me in terms of what the Amy Schumer's character and Bill Hader's character go on to do. The film hadn't got me to that point by the end. That's, I think, my major criticism with the film. She's a very unlikable character, Amy, and I found it very difficult to go with her on her journey and where she ends up in the end. I wasn't terribly convinced, but it did seem like a lot of people in the preview audience were.
Whereas I cried. But that said, that was basically because the popcorn had run out. Okay, well, listen, speaking of things to do with relationships, and following up with another comedy about relationships, in the August edition of Eternity, you can take a look at the Blu-ray DVD release of While We Are Young, courtesy of Ben's article, on Generation X meets Generation Y, where couple Ben Stiller and Naomi Watts have an ethical collision with Maria Dissler and Adam Horovitz. Is truth just something the previous generation was worried about? Find out in this month's Eternity. And also in this month's Eternity, A Million Ways to Share the Gospel. Bible Society CEO Greg Clark is on the cover of Eternity's August edition. He says there are a million different ways to share the gospel, and it doesn't always have to involve inviting people to church.
My first question is, does he list all 1 million ways?
Well, this is a very, very thick edition. Listen, August Eternity has hit the churches as of last weekend, so on Sunday. So really go out and grab a copy. Well worth having a look at. That's that's what our kids have been watching and what I expect you'll be reading this weekend. Now, what will we be watching this coming week, Ben?
Or what the people out there might be watching. So Fantastic Four and Trainwreck are out, as we've talked about earlier in the show. The only other major release at cinemas this week is Last Cab to Darwin. It's an Australian drama that looks to be all about euthanasia, but we're going to talk about this more on the show next week.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Stars Michael Caton and Jackie Weaver. I say it looks to be more about euthanasia because, well, we'll give more away on the show next week about what Last Cab to Darwin actually plays out to be. Some DVD and Blu-ray releases marked notable this week. Pitch Perfect 2. I know you'll be lining up down at the front of some store to get this.
Which we won't promote. But
I didn't see this. I quite liked the first one. I hear the second one's much more of the same. So if you're a fan of the first one, I dare say you'll want to see Pitch Perfect 2. There are these two straight-to-DVD choices this week that both seem to be dealing with the concepts of mortality but coming from different sides of it. There's a film called Lullaby that stars Amy Adams and Jessica Brown Finlay from Downton Abbey. And it's a movie about a terminally ill dad who wants his machine shut off and his son kind of freaking out about all the mortality issues that go on with that. Then there's another movie called The Lazarus Effect that's got Olivia Wilde in it. She's an actress that she started out in House, but she's been in lots of other movies in the last couple of years. The Lazarus Effect is about these medical students that somehow are able to resurrect people from the dead. Unfortunately, though, this film didn't resurrect much apart from anger and frustration from critics. On Rotten Tomatoes, it got 13% after having about 80 reviews filed on The Lazarus Effect. So I think, in short, don't bother. And then very quickly, Boardwalk Empire and House of Cards. So Boardwalk Empire Seasons 1 to 5 are all out in a box set, and House of Cards Seasons 1 to 3 out in a back box set. My question to that is, why would you get those? Because A, House of Cards Seasons 1 to 3 is all on Netflix, so just pay your Netflix monthly subscription.
Or do the 1 month free trial.
Or do the 1 month free trial. And the same with Boardwalk Empire. I think it's on Stan or Presto, one of those. So I just question why they're being released. But I really, really like, particularly Boardwalk Empire. I'm not recommending it to everybody, but check it out.
You're right. No reason to watch DVDs this week. So why don't we talk about TV instead? Look, this is one of the big weeks. Okay, so what kicked off late last week, Restaurant Revolution on 7 Network, head-to-head with 9 Network's Hot Plate. It's hard to stick a knife between these two programs.
Oh.
I wish somebody would stick a knife in the producers.
Oh.
Ow.
So this is more restaurant cooking competition shows.
Restaurant Revolution is 5 teams from around Australia charged with designing and running their own pop-up restaurant. Each week they'll be judged by a group of experts, their customers, and also on their profit, which I think is probably the new interesting thing.
Yeah.
You know, because that, to me, I think is a little more interesting to see what happens.
And does sound interesting.
In the end, the best and most profitable restaurant of the series will win the grand prize of $200,000. Now, Nine's sort of answer to that is Hot Plate, unsung local restaurant heroes from around the country battling over dinner to win $100,000 prize and realize their food dream, and a usual barrage of judges, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, but, you know, to me, I think if you're picking between the two, Restaurant Revolution sounds more interesting, but frankly, I'm so tired of food programs on television, I probably won't watch either.
Anything else around?
What I find is actually really interesting is that Nine Network is following the Hot Plate up with, you know, after celebrating eating, is following the Hot Plate up with Embarrassing Bodies Down Under. And also The Truth About Calories. How to undercut your own schedule. But there you go. Okay, listen.
Just serving every audience, Mark.
I know. Every audience, indeed. The ABC has a good series starting called Humans. It starts today, okay? I think this is really interesting. It's taking us just over that technological horizon and saying the new coolest thing that you actually have in your family now is a family synth, okay? A synthesized human being that's part of your life. Raises all sorts of issues, not the least of which would be basically slavery, or for that matter, what it's like to actually have low-paid and immigrant, you know, people sort of taking over those jobs no one wants to do in the house. Great idea for a documentary, television series, but it's going to be competing hard against Network 10's release today, The Great Australian Spelling Bee, and that starts tonight at 7:30 p.m. with hosts Grant Denyer and Chrissy Swan in search of Australia's brightest junior word buff. Now, we're actually doing that next week too.
Yeah.
Okay, so have a look at that.
And as we are also talking about Last Cab to Darwin, which I mentioned, also on next week's show, the top 5 cab rides in movies, Mark, the best cab journeys, and we're also going to talk about this old TV show that's going to hit the big screen called The Man from Uncle. That's coming up next week when I still will be, as far as I understand, Ben McKechnie.
And I'm Mark Adley.
The Big Picture is a Bible Society Australia production and part of Hope 103.2's family of podcasts and vodcasts.